Welcome to our Farming Water Scotland podcast series. Over this series, we're looking at various mitigation options, guidance and farmers' experience to help manage and improve water quality on farm in the surrounding area. You can listen back to all previous episodes in this series and other podcasts we produce for Farming Water Scotland on any podcast provider. Please like, follow and subscribe and leave us a review. I'm Fiona Salter, environmental consultant and host for today's podcast. In today's episode, we're discussing soils on farm to reduce diffuse pollution with Karen Dobby, a principal soil scientist from SEPA, and David Ross, principal agricultural consultant focusing on arable services from SEC Consulting. We'll be focusing on soils on farm and looking at ways to reduce runoff and erosion, so keeping the soil in the field and preventing diffuse water pollution. Welcome, Karen and David, and thank you for joining us today. Karen, I mentioned briefly in your introduction, but do you want to tell us more about your role at SEPA and the area that you work in?
Thanks, Fiona. Yeah, so as you said, I'm SEPA's principal soil scientist, and I are the soils guys in SEPA. Like, we provide science advice to policy and regulatory colleagues on the importance of soils and the role they play in protecting the wider environment, as well as providing a range of benefits to people in the economy.
Thanks. And David, do you want to just briefly see your background?
Hi, thanks Fiona. I'm an agronomist and work with arable farmers, really looking at the agronomy of their crops, their soil health, crop nutrition, as well as the financial side of their businesses. So that's what I look at. I've got an interest in soil health and regen farming as well.
Thank you. So, like, moving on, like, why should we care about soil in the farming sector?
I think we're now, soils are, they've been saying this for a few years now, soils are moving up the agenda. So I think everyone is now more aware of the importance of looking after our soil. And I guess we're all very aware of that soils provide a wide range of benefits. So from an agricultural point of view, soils grow food, which is pretty obvious, but they also do other things like protect water quality, they influence climate, and they support biodiversity. And we know now that healthy soils can be part of the solution to many of the issues we face, including the climate and the biodiversity crises, as well as obviously maintaining our food security. So from a farming point of view, soil is absolutely critical. It's a natural resource that underpins your business. But the flip side is that if soils aren't looked after and they become damaged or degraded, they can't provide all of those benefits, and then they become a cost to the farm business. So we know that soils change all the time. You can improve them, but also they get damaged. And these soil degradation processes include soil erosion, soil compaction, we lose organic matter, and these are all driven by pressures external to the farm business, such as changes in climate, but they can also be caused by inappropriate land use and land management practices. And another really key point, I think, is that healthy soils are much more resilient to any of the pressures acting on them, but they can only be pushed so far, because then they reach a tipping point and then they become damaged beyond repair, and they can no longer do what you want them to do. So we have to really prevent soils from becoming degraded so that they can do all the things that you want them to do for your business and also for the wider environment and people.
Mm-hmm. I think for in a farming point of view, it's the old kind of, sounds a bit cheesy, but the old adage that it's your biggest asset that you've got, and it definitely is. And I think we're seeing a kind of shift that people are becoming more aware of the benefits of having a healthy soil and having a resilient soil. I mean, it brings resilience to the business because it's able to cope with the kind of extremes of weather that we're seeing. Seeing at the moment, whether that's long periods of wet weather or long periods of dry weather. And financially, these farming businesses are utilising the soil to make money. So having them resilient and being able to cope with the conditions that we're getting and being able to produce a crop that is financially viable at the end of the day is really important. Mm-hmm. And trying to I think there's a shift in people's thinking and trying to get the soil to provide more for us, as in getting it to cycle better, to cycle nutrients better, to be able to store water, to be able to work for us more than it is at the moment. And I think this last year has proved that with the weather that we've seen in the tail, well, the last in 23 and the start of 24, we're seeing very extremes of weather, and getting I think like to call them weather events, when you get to this really heavy downpours,
mm-hmm.
or heavy rain that in a lot of cases soils are not able to cope with. But if you do see the difference in a healthy situation where it's able to infiltrate water better, and it's not, we're not getting the same levels of runoff and things that there is. So,
we will talk about the changing weather patterns a bit in later on today. But just, you've mentioned soil health, but can we define what soil health actually is, and how can farmers understand if their soil is healthy? Karen, do you want to, if there's a, I'm guessing there's not just a black and white description of what classifies good soil health, but
yeah, it's the however many million dollar question, that one. So what is a healthy soil? It's soil, a kind of scientific definition is saying that soils are healthy when they're in good chemical, biological and physical condition, and thus able to provide the benefits we expect. But what does that mean? How do you know your soils are healthy? And I'm pretty sure most farmers have a really good idea of whether their soils are healthy or not without having to be told. However, it's a very active area of research, and there are some pretty basic sort of universal principles that we can apply, such as making sure your soils, a healthy soil is one with a good structure, is one with good organic matter content, it's got the right amount of nutrients for and pH for what you want it to do. And these kind of basic things go a long way to achieving a healthy soil. I mean, one way of looking at healthy soil is it's in a good condition to do the things you want it to do. So for an agricultural business, you might have a different definition of a healthy soil for a forestry business or for another aspect that you want soil to do. But I think, basically the there's these universal principles that you can look to. And I know that, for example, if you want to know what a healthy soil is for you, then the AHDB and SEC have developed a soil health scorecard, which lists things that you can look for and lists criteria, if you like, numbers that you should try and get to help you decide if your soil's healthy or what you might need to do to improve it. And I think David might be able to speak a bit more about that from a practical point of view.
Yeah, David, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, so EVES was developed a number of years ago now.
Do you want to define EVES?
Yeah, so I was just going to say, visual examination of soil structure. I keep wanting to say assessment, but it's not. It's examination of soil structure. And it really is just about getting spayed out, going into the field, picking a representative sort of sample or area from the field and digging a hole. There is a scorecard which we can maybe put a link to at the bottom.
Yeah, I'll link to all the things we discussed about.
To let folks see it. So it's a case of trying to hinge a piece of soil out of the ground, having a look to see if there's different colours within it, looking to see what the structure looks like, looking to see if there's layers of compaction, if there's any tightness within the soil, breaking it up. I'm a little bit sad, so I like to have a sniff of it as well, just to see what it smells like. You can tell if there's a lack of oxygen within it, and just trying to put a score score against it. So looking at the different qualities of the soil, and there's a score from 1 to 5 as to how to score it. But it's really just about physically digging the hole, having a look, trying to see how far the roots are going, see if the roots are coming down through the soil and then hitting a pan and going horizontally instead of vertically. Mm-hmm. Having a look to see how many worms there are. If you're really sad, you can try and see what different types of worms there is, because they have different roles within the soils. Looking for the holes to see how much water can be infiltrated through that. You get an idea of the amount of organic matter. You can see a little bit as to how that's breaking down and what things, bacteria and stuff, are working. A little bit, you can see mm-hmm. that a little bit, depends on soil.
So you can get a lot of information from just getting a spade out and digging up.
Most definitely. That's the first thing I tend to do is if you've got a problem, certainly is take a spade out and have a look. And then trying to get a comparison if you've done something over time to see if it's made a difference. So there's lots of apps now that you can record the area that you took the sample from. Even simple things like What Three Words can be good to take you to a 3 meter spot to see where you took a sample from. And then coming back in a year or two's time to see if there's any difference in what's happened.
So. That's really good advice. And then looking at more like the actual soil health, like having your soil analysed, how we do, like the new PEPFA guidance, which is online, I'll send a link in here. It has a big section of how you actually, what you should look for with soil sampling. So we don't need to go into the technical detail about that. But do you want to mention soil analysis and soil sampling to understand your soil?
So, yeah, I mean, back to the kind of triangle of soil health in the physical, the structural, and the chemical, the biological, and the physical nature. Mm-hmm. The chemical bit, I mean, there's lots of different ways to soil to sample soil through, whether it's just the classic W shape through the field or the more sophisticated GPS type sampling. There is now some tests coming on board that look at the biological element of that soils, which give an indication. It is, you've got to remember, it is a snapshot in time, depending on what the weather's like and what the soil's like at that time. Mm-hmm. But there is some things that can give you an indication as to how much biology there is in the soil, certainly.
Yeah.
And understanding things like cation exchange capacity and things in your soil, so you know how the soil reacts, can be useful as well.
Yeah. And obviously we talked about soil health, like the opposite side, like the implications of soil loss from, say, structural damage, weather damage, just compaction. Yeah. What can losing topsoil mean, like financially, nutritionally, pollution to the farmers? I don't care if you want to come in at the start.
One of the main threats to soil, so if the soil is degraded, it won't do what you want it to do, basically. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of different threats to soil, so soil degradation processes, so there's erosion and compaction, loss of organic matter, contamination, etc. And one of the obvious things this year, like you said, is we've had such a wet in the east of Scotland. It's been so wet and so miserable, and it feels like it's been grey and raining the whole winter. And if you go up and down the east coast, you just see so much erosion. Generally, because the volume and intensity of the rainfall that we've seen, but soil erosion is actually a natural process. It happens all the time. But it is made worse by various factors. Mm-hmm. It's basically where the soil particles break off from the surface and then they're moved across the land by water or wind. And the magnitude, the amount, or how frequently this happens, it depends on what your soil type is, how much rain has fallen, when it falls, what the slope's like, whether you've got a vegetation cover or not, what your land sort of, what your land use and land management practices are. And these events can be triggered. It doesn't only happen if there's a lot of rain in a short time, although that's obviously a really big trigger, but it can also be happened by a low intensity rainfall, like a small amount that happens over a long time and slowly builds up the water in the soil, and then it just fails. And like I said, these can be triggered by rainfall or by inappropriate land management practices. So for example, if you've got in the autumn, if you've got a bare or a recently ploughed or seeded arable field and it starts raining, then and raining really heavily, then that soil, that land is going to be much more vulnerable to erosion than if you've got a cover over it, mm-hmm. that protects it. So soil erosion can also be made worse by other degradation processes. So for example, if your soil is compacted, you get much less water infiltration in it, and you're much more likely to get runoff going over the top, then that'll pick up soil particles and it'll erode it across or off the field. Mm-hmm. So the most obvious, the most direct effects of soil erosion actually are pretty much like formation of rills and gullies in your field, and that takes the soil and any nutrients attached to that soil out of the field, either redistributes it or takes it out of the field altogether. And that's obviously really not good for a farming business, because that's the loss of your critical resource, that's the loss of your soil, and the loss of the fertility. And that's likely to have not a great impact on your crop yield or your fertiliser needs, your fertiliser use.
And it's where that soil ends up as well.
Yeah, so as well as the impact on your farm and your business, that if that soil ends up in the road or ends up in the watercourse, it then smothers, it can smother the habitats for fish spawning, mm-hmm. and it can cause diffuse nutrient pollution in the water, and obviously that's not a great thing either. There's a cost to you and also the cost to society as a whole, and while you might be able to deal with like a one-off event and rectify it, if you have a lot of small events over time, then that can build up and it can really affect the long-term sustainability of the land and result in loss of benefits such as crop production, but also, like I mentioned, we've got carbon sequestration and carbon storage. It's not a great thing to happen.
No, and as we've seen, like even last year, like the dry summer to the extreme mm-hmm. flooding events, like the soil, how do we mitigate, how do farmers mitigate against the extreme weather patterns? David, I don't know if you want to jump in.
It's a really tricky one, to be honest, because thankfully no 2 years are the same. But I think just nipping back to last year, I think we saw basically in this part of the world, from June, pretty much end of June, start of July onwards, we had rain certainly every week, with only a few dry days in between, and that caused a bit of problems, as in the soil started to compact on the top a little bit. We then had, well, round about here, trying to lift potatoes and stuff was tricky, and then which delayed things a bit more, delayed again, and then we were in trying to try to lift potatoes and then get winter crop in what turned out to be relatively fine seed beds in a lot of cases after potatoes, and then a deluge of rain and it did run. There is not many fields in this part of the world that do not have a run somewhere in them that there is a bit of erosion. What can we do to try and mitigate against that? Well, there is some things that we can do. We can try and sow sort of cross the contours of the fields a little bit to try and stop that from running. With GPS technology and things that we've got on, not on every farm, but on a lot of farms now, we don't actually need to sow tram lines. We can actually, or leave tram lines. We can sow them, and then we can just put them in using GPS technology when we do need to go in and spray the crop. So that's got a fair benefit in having a living root in the tram lines, and it does tend to hold them together and just save that sort of running and erosion down through the tram lines. Just in a lot of cases, well, what we've seen in a lot of cases is actually some of the drainage systems that there is in fields are actually maybe just getting to the end of their days and needing a bit of maintenance. So just making sure that kind of thing is in good order, that outflows are getting away and things, just to let, once the field is at field capacity, that is letting the water away. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's things like grass margins and beetle banks that could be put in through the fields to try and slow water flow, or trying to, if there is a run, being able to catch it a little bit before it ends up in a water course.
So I suppose looking at your land and seeing where would actually be more appropriate to put like a buffer strip to catch on bottom of slopes and things like that.
Yeah, we need some of these for EFA and things as well for our subsidy payments, and we might need more going forward. So there's a reasonable chance if it's run once, it's going to do it again with the weather events that we seem to be having. So trying to utilise them as best we can is always useful.
Yeah. And I'd just like to add to that as well. So yeah, having a buffer strip catches erosion and stops it getting out of the field, but it's not stopping the erosion in the first place. So if we can try and, the other thing is intercept the water before it gets to run. So if we can put in anything that slows down water flow or catches water flow or intercepts it, and it is all of benefit.
I think
margins at different parts, like you said, margins at different parts of the field would help a lot.
Yeah. And I think I was thinking more on kind of winter crops and sweetening of that, but actually trying to carry a cover through the winter.
Absolutely, yeah.
What we're seeing this year is there's a lot of compaction just in the top of the soil. So the first inch and a half or so is quite compact. And actually, once you're below that, it's not so bad, but the water's struggling to get through that first inch and a half. So actually having a cover crop, I'm a great believer in having a living root in the soil as long as you can. And it gives a twofold effect. It actually acts like an umbrella protecting the soil and stopping that rain splash. But it also provides a channel through the rooting system to let to burst open the soil and to let the water away. So the cover crops have got their own, they're not the easiest things to try and establish in this part of the world. But trying to do that, and even things, simple things like just a cheap cover of grass on a field sown in the autumn can be enough just to hold everything together just with the rooting system that there is and slow things down.
Just give it that bit of extra protection.
Yeah, yeah.
And like looking at guidance or seeking help, what is available for farmers? Like what resources are out there and what groups are out there that they can learn from? Because obviously being able to learn from what others are doing can be of like key benefit to farmers. Is there anything actively out there right now that farmers can tap into and learn from?
There's lots of resources through Farm and Water Scotland and through Farm Advisory Service that you're able to pick up on. But it's also good to see these things happening on farm. So some of the Fast Connect groups that there is have been looking at these things. Maybe not their sole focus, but within it. Have been covered. We've certainly got a regenerative agriculture group that is looking at that sort of principles and how that benefits their soils. There's lots of different things to be found. Just need to go out and have a look.
Yeah. Well, we'll put links on the website beside this podcast of everything we've discussed today and maybe some additional items. So looking overall, like within Scotland, do we have any idea of what the cost of soil erosion is?
So, excuse me, there was a project carried out in 2019 to try and start getting an idea of the cost of soil degradation in Scotland, and they focused on soil erosion as a first start. And these included the costs incurred by both land-based businesses where soil erosion occurs and also by society as a whole where it's deposited in streams or on roads or whatever. So they included looking at the on-site costs. They looked at where the decline in agricultural yields caused by the loss of soil and also the cost of replacing nutrients for loss of fertility. And they also looked at off-site costs due to water quality damage and also greenhouse gas emissions. And they came up with a number that estimated that the total cost of soil erosion in Scotland were around £50 million a year, when that included drinking water treatment. Mm-hmm. But for the on-site cost, so the actual cost to farm businesses, were estimated to be around £10 million a year. So it's not an insignificant amount of money.
No, it's significant. Yeah. And thinking about these costs and regenerative agriculture and how that is being shown as a way for farmers to improve soil management on farm. David, do you want to mention about regenerative agriculture practices and how they can be used on farm to, well, reduce this cost? Because soil erosion is costing farmers all over Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, regenerative agriculture is an option, but it's the term that is being used at the moment. But actually, it's down to kind of five kind of principles that is key, and I think people can pick and mix within that five degree to try and make something that it just makes good sense as far as soil health is concerned. So, and we'll just run through the kind of principles that there is. So the first one is really about reducing cultivations. Now, that means different things to different people. But to me, it is just about trying to do the minimum possible to get a crop established.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that is direct drilling or if it's minimal tillage or whether that is ploughing, depending on which part of the world you're in. Just about trying to do as least that you can to produce a crop and let the soil be as undisturbed as possible, which is a benefit to structure and biology and in the kind of chemical nature of the soil, organic matter. So it's about thinking down that lines rather than thinking that it is no-till and the challenges that can bring.
Yeah, there's definitely options within it.
Yeah, there's definitely options within it. It can take time. It takes time. It can take a few years to move from one type of system to another. But we've got plenty of guys that are doing that at the moment. The second pillar is really about diversity and about trying to bring diversity into either into your rotation, I would say, is one, trying to not have monocropping year on year within the system, which is good for your soils because obviously different types of rooting systems and different type of scavenging ability for different soils is a big benefit. But it could also mean diversity, as in if you're sowing grassland, making sure there's a diversity within that. So it could be using plantain or something or herbal mixes within your soils. It could be a diverse cover crop that you're putting in that's got different rooting styles to try and hold that together. So it means a couple of different things. It means both of them to me. It's about trying to get that into the system. The third thing's thinking about a living root. I'm a big believer in trying to have a living root in the soil for as long as possible.
Yeah.
It brings lots of benefits. It can hold the soil together. It can let water penetrate through it. It can give us a bit of shelter from heavy rainfall. It can shelter us from sun as well. So it brings a lot of benefits to having that living root. And keeping the soil covered is the other one. So they are kind of linked together. Trying to have some kind of cover on the soil, whether that can be chopped straw, it could be a crop, just trying to protect it and hold it together. And then the fifth one is about adding livestock into the system. So the arable farms that there is, it's about adding livestock into that so that they can either graze something, graze some of the crops that there is, possibly graze a cover crop. It's about bringing another source of nutrition onto the farm, but also bringing a biological element to it. Mm-hmm. So bringing an organic form of nutrition onto the farm has a big benefit for the soil biology as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's thinking in that sort of lines. And like I say, you can pick and mix, and there is no blueprint to this at all. It is whatever suits what is going on in your farm.
Yeah, I just echo that. I think that really, that sums it up really well. It's all these basic principles that you can do. And also just to say, like when you were saying, it's whatever suits on your farm. So it's all about knowing what kind of soil you have and what it can do. And choosing the measures that are appropriate for that soil and that slope and that climate. So that's,
and it is kind of that. It's kind of the thing that the cool kids are doing at the moment. But it's not. A lot of this is basic mixed agriculture in Scotland, and it's a term that's been banded south of the border, where a lot of the farms were all arable on short rotations, hadn't seen livestock. Hadn't seen much diversity at all. But actually in Scotland, we're probably a little bit ahead of the curve because we've been doing this for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, it's like, it isn't just for arable farms. The whole farming sector can do it. Like there are some guidance, which I'll add into the podcast, of like different styles of farms that and how you can approach regenerative agriculture to your farm. I think because it's not a black and white, it can be so adaptable and suitable for all farming enterprises.
Yeah, I didn't mention about like grazing, different styles of grazing as well can have an effect on a livestock farm, and being able to feed the soil, whether it's being through mob grazing or things like that, where they're grazing some of the grass, they're effectively trampling some of that grass back in and feeding the soil and the biology that way. There is, like I say, there's lots of different ways to cut it through.
Yeah, and basically it's all about just trying to keep the soil on the farm and not lose it financially for the business and for the environmental implications on the wider environment. That there's so many options available.
Yeah, it's the soil, but it's also the nutrition. Mm-hmm. It's about trying to reduce the amount of inputs that needs to come onto the farm as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about thinking about it in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
And it's not new.
No.
None of this is new.
Some of it's been.
It is just. You could argue how it's been influenced, but since the Second World War, there's been a slightly different take on things. So it's just folk realising that actually putting a lot of inputs into some of these crops is maybe not the most efficient for their business or for their soils, and trying to retain as much of the money that is generated from farming and retaining it in their own business.
Mm-hmm. And like looking at information that farmers can utilise to help their soil health and improve soil management. Obviously, the PEPFA guidance has just been updated and is live online. We'll put a link to that now. There's a valuing soils brochure, which is available on Farm Water Scotland's website, which has got key information. But Karen, did you say that there was subsequent information that's addition to the valuing your soils brochure?
There's a couple of more recent fact sheets that would have been put in the back if they were printed, but they're available. They're also available on the page where you can get the Valuing Your Soils brochure, and that looks at specifically pathways of diffuse pollution and how you can try and mitigate those.
Mm-hmm.
There's also things like the Soil Finder, GHI, if you want to understand your own soils on your farm, the SFIS, I think it is, Soil Finder on GHI. It's an app for your phone as well. I find that quite useful, mm-hmm. just to understand the natural abilities of your soils as to what it shouldn't be able to do.
And also linked to the soil information is the James Hutton James Hutton Institute also created the risk maps or the vulnerability maps of soils, and there is one on soil erosion and one mm-hmm. on soil compaction and one on runoff. So that looks at the vulnerability of soils to these processes. So you can look at those maps and get an idea of what risk your soils might be at. So if you can see that your soils might be of high risk of erosion, you can maybe take more measures to try and protect them.
And put in
measures to those as well.
Yeah, obviously the Farm Advisory Service has a lot of information about soil management and soil advice, which we can link to. And Farm Water Scotland have a soil and nutrients page. And as we mentioned before, the soil health card, which is available on the AHDB website, which I'll link to as well. Thank you, Karen and David, for joining us today. It's been a really interesting discussion. And thank you for joining us today. On the webpage, we've saved all the links to documents and guidance notes that have been discussed throughout this podcast. If you have enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe and follow our podcast wherever you listen to them. Please get in touch if you want to find out more. Farming and Water Scotland is a partnership programme funded by the Scottish Government and delivered by SEC Consulting with support from SEPA to help farmers and land managers reduce diffuse pollution risk and the benefit to the farm business.